It's good to be in church with you this morning. I don't know if you realize this, but this is actually the last Sunday service of the decade. It's the last one. It's a pretty big deal. It's pretty special. And it's a funny one because I always say that this Sunday in between Christmas and New Year's, that week between Christmas and New Year's really is kind of like the lost week. You don't really know what's going on. Like, no one knows what time it is. You wake up at crazy times. You go to bed at crazy times. You don't even know what day it is. And so, as Mark already said, but good on you for being here, because I think that someone might even show up tomorrow and be like, what day is it? I thought today was Sunday. Like, I thought when I woke up yesterday it was Sunday for a little bit. And so it is awesome to be here with you this morning, the last Sunday of the decade in this kind of lost week. And I hope you all had a wonderful Christmas and are looking forward to New Year's. So have you ever been told that things are going to work out in the long run? Things are going to work out in the long run. Something happens, usually it's not so good, and someone's trying to make you feel better, like, hey, it's all going to work out in the long run. Or if you're stressed about or anxious about something and they tell you, like, don't worry, it's all going to work out in the long run. And you're like, okay, well, what does that mean, though? What does that look like? I'm a big sports fan, and so when you're following a team for a while, they go through ups and downs, and so there's some times where a team is doing really, really bad, and there's a coach or a general manager or someone in charge, and they're making choices that maybe you don't agree with, and you're thinking, why are you doing this? Why are you doing that? And they always are saying to you, don't worry, God, trust me, it's going to work out, it's going to be good, and if you know, in the long run, we're going to be great, like, we're going to win, it's going to be fantastic. And the best thing about that for them is that you don't actually know what the long run means. Like, you don't know, does that mean like 3 years? Does that mean like 20 years? Like, what does the long run mean? And they always say, just trust me, it's going to be good, it's going to work out for you in the long run. And if you're a Canucks fan, you've been hoping that for a long time, that it's going to work out in the long run. And it hasn't yet, but maybe one day, maybe one day. Today we're going to be looking at someone who had a lot of stuff happen to them that was not so good, but it really did work out for them in the long run. If you can put the first slide up. We're going to be looking at the life of Joseph, the life of Joseph. Peter was joking with me before the service saying, so you're going to look at the whole life? And I said, yeah, we're going to be here all week. And he was down for it, but I don't think the rest of you would be. So don't worry, I won't keep you that long. So Joseph was, if you're not familiar, I'm going to go through the quick overview of his life, just to refresh your memory, or maybe if you've never heard it before, and then look at a couple lessons that we can learn from it. So Joseph was born to Jacob and to Rachel, and Joseph was born when Jacob was pretty old. So his dad was pretty old when Joseph was born. And so because of that, Joseph was Jacob's favorite. And not in the, like, kind of secretive way where I'm not a parent, but like if you are a parent and you secretly have a favorite, you probably shouldn't, but if you do, you try to hide it a little bit. You don't want to, like, make it showing, so you're kind of trying to make everything even. Like, Jacob did not try to hide it. Like, Joseph was clearly the favorite, and all his brothers, which is a lot of them, they all knew. They all knew that he was the favorite, to the point where, like, Joseph's dad would make him this, like, special coat, this, like, special garment that he would wear, and said, it's just for you. Now, can you imagine you're one of the brothers, and you're like, okay, Dad, I get it. Like, you like him more. Like, you don't have to put a coat on him to, you know, show that, you know, we get it. Okay, he's the best. Awesome. And so the brothers were jealous of Joseph. His brothers didn't really like him. He had this fancy coat. He's clearly Dad's favorite. They didn't love him. They did not, weren't super big fans of him. And to make matters worse, I think Joseph must not have been super socially aware because he starts having these dreams. And I guess he didn't pick up on social cues that, hey, your brothers don't really like you because you're kind of the favorite. And he says, hey, guys, like, bro, I had this dream. And they're like, okay, what's the dream? Well, in this dream, you were all bowing before me, all of you. You were bowing before me. Even the moon and stars were bowing before me. Isn't that awesome? And his brothers, yeah, great, fantastic, right? And he has no idea that they're jealous, or they're, you know, and telling them, yeah, I had this amazing dream. Isn't that fantastic? You're all bowing before me. I think that's going to happen one day. And they're like, oh, of course it is. Great. And so it actually got to the point that they were so fed up with him, and they were so jealous of him, that they made this plan to get rid of him. And so they took him away from home, and they ended up getting him in this pit, and they were going to kill him, but they couldn't do it. They couldn't follow through with killing him. They just couldn't go that far. And so they thought, what can we do? We can't bring him back now. Like, what can we do? And so luckily for them, there was a passing group of people, a caravan of people passing by, and they thought, well, what if we sell him to them? We'll sell him to them, we'll take his fancy coat, we'll throw some blood on it, say, hey, we don't know what happened, Dad, he's dead, we're sorry, can I have a coat now? Like, what's the deal? And so they make this plan, and so Joseph gets sold into slavery, and it ends up in this guy named Potiphar's house. And Potiphar was one of Pharaoh's like ministers, one of his like kind of chief leaders. And he gets sold into Potiphar's house, and Potiphar ended up actually really liking Joseph. And so Joseph actually works his way up in Potiphar's house to be like the manager of his estate, which is pretty impressive. Like Joseph would be pretty young, and he works his way up, and he's the manager of Potiphar's estate. So it's worked out okay for him. He's still a slave, but he's worked his way up. But then what happens is that Potiphar's wife was also very fond of Joseph. And so one day, she made a pretty aggressive move on Joseph. And Joseph, trying to be honorable, would not do it. And so she was trying to sleep with him, and he refused. And he tries to run away, and his clothes actually end up getting ripped. And so he runs off, and Potiphar obviously hears of this, and, well, what's Potiphar's wife going to say? Oh, yeah, honey, sorry, I did this, you know, Joseph's great. Like, no, so she lied and said, hey, Joseph was the one who tried to, like, attack me. And so who's Potiphar going to believe? So Potiphar says, okay, well, Joseph, you're being thrown in jail now. So Joseph now gets thrown in prison. So things have not worked out super well for him. He was the favorite with his dad, gets sold to slavery. He's the favorite with Potiphar, gets thrown in prison. And while he's in prison, he meets these two people who are just thrown in prison by Pharaoh. And they are both talking about how they had these dreams. And they didn't know what they meant, and they were kind of confused by them. And so Joseph says, hey, like I can tell you what they mean. Like I'm an expert on dreams, actually, because I had, you know. And so he tells them that this is what your dream means. And so he says to the cupbearer, which was one of the guys, says, hey, like your dream means you're going to be released, and you're going to be back with Pharaoh. And to the other guy who was a baker, he says, your dream's not so good. Like, you're going to be hung, actually. And they're like, okay, well, so I'm sure that the cupbearer is like, I hope you're right. And the baker's like, please no, I hope you're wrong. And so fast forward, exactly what Joseph said happened. So the cupbearer gets brought back to Pharaoh, and the baker gets hung. And Joseph had asked the cupbearer, hey, like, tell Pharaoh about me, like, when you see him again. And the cupbearer's like, yeah, sure. But the cupbearer forgets. And 2 years go by. That's a long time. Like, if you're Joseph, maybe the first few days you're thinking, oh, I know he's going to tell the Pharaoh. I'm going to be out there pretty soon. But 2 years go by. 2 years go by of him in prison. But at this point, the Pharaoh himself starts having these dreams. He doesn't know what they mean. And he's asking his advisors, and his advisors can't figure it out. They don't know what they mean either. And it's just then that the cupbearer remembers Joseph. And he says to Pharaoh, hey, like, Pharaoh, I can imagine this kind of awkward conversation. Remember, like, 2 years ago when you, like, threw me in jail and then you let me out? Like, you're so awesome, by the way. So I met this guy, and he actually interpreted this dream. And so maybe he could help you. And so Pharaoh at this point says, I have nothing to lose. So he brings Joseph before him and tells him his dream. And Joseph says, this is what your dream means. What your dream is saying is that for 7 years, Egypt is going to have 7 years of plenty. Like, the harvests are going to be great. Everything's going to be great. You're going to have tons and tons of food and all that good stuff. But after that, there's going to be 7 years of famine. 7 years where you're not going to have a lot. So what I would do if I was you is I would use those 7 years of plenty to store up food in storehouses to sustain you in the 7 years of famine. Like, don't just go crazy during the 7 years of plenty, but actually make a plan and save up. And so Pharaoh, hearing this, thinks that's incredibly wise. That's great advice. And Pharaoh actually makes Joseph the viceroy, the second in command behind Pharaoh in all of Egypt. It's a pretty meteoric rise. It goes from like favorite son to slave to favorite slave to jail to now he's second in command in all of Egypt. And so fast forward some time, and what Joseph said came true. There were 7 years of plenty, and they made all these storehouses of grain, and all this stuff, and then it became the famine. And the famine was all over the land. And so people actually hearing that there was food in Egypt would travel to Egypt to try to buy food for their families because there was such a severe famine. And then it gets to this like climactic point in the story where Joseph's brothers leave their land because there's famine and they need to get some food. And they come and they walk in hoping to buy some grain. And who do they walk in front of but Joseph? And they all walk in and they see Joseph. And Joseph immediately knows who they are, but they don't recognize him. So they say, trying to be all, you know, sucking up. Oh, but you're so great. Can we buy some grain? Like and they don't even recognize who he is. And Joseph realizes this. And so he comes up with a plan. And he wants to see if they actually regret what they did to him. And so he says, who are you? And they say, this is who we are. This is our father. We actually have a younger brother named Benjamin who's back at home with our father. And so we're trying to buy food for our whole family. And so Joseph then says, okay, I think you guys are spies. And they say, no, we're not spies. He says, okay, well, prove it to me. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you a little bit of food. Simeon, one of your brothers, is going to stay with me in prison, and I need you to go home and bring back Benjamin to prove that who you say you are. And so they leave, they bring back some food, and they tell their father what happened. And at first their father says, I've already lost Joseph. Now Simeon's in jail. I cannot lose Benjamin. So you're not going to go back. But eventually the food that they had gotten from Joseph runs out. And so they say, well, we have to. And so they travel back with Benjamin. And they come before Joseph. And then Joseph says, okay, great. Here's some food. But he had another idea in mind. So he gives them all this food. But he tells his servants to put a gold cup into Benjamin's bag with the food. And then they leave, and so Joseph sends his servants out to them and accuses them of stealing. And they say, no, we haven't stolen anything. You can search us by all means. And they even went as far to say, if you find something, you can kill the person who has it. We did not take anything. And so they search the bags, and they find the cup in Benjamin's bag. And so they all get brought before Joseph, and Joseph says, how could you do this? You stole from me after all I did for you. And they said, no, we don't know how this happened. We're really sorry. And so Joseph says, okay, here's what we're going to do. You're going to leave Benjamin here with me, and the rest of you can go with your food. And he did this to test them. And then Judah, one of the brothers, says, no, we can't. If we don't come back with Benjamin, our father will surely die. He can't take it. So can you please take me instead? Can you take me? Can I take his place? Benjamin can go home. I'll take his place. Do whatever you want to me. Is that okay? So Joseph, seeing this, realizes that maybe they had learned from what they did to him. And at this point, he reveals who he is. He reveals that he's their brother that was sold into slavery and that he's alive and he's doing quite well. Crazy story. It's a crazy story. It's a lot of ups and downs, a lot of twists and turns. And I think about, if I'm Joseph, there must have been so many moments where he was like, you got to be kidding me. He's the favorite, sold. Okay, that's brutal. I've worked my way up. I didn't even do anything wrong. She accuses me. Now I'm in jail. Okay, that's brutal. I help this guy out. He forgets about me. Okay. And now he works his way. It's a crazy, crazy story. So I want to look at two quick lessons that we can take away from this story. And the first is this. Joseph was not immune to hard times, even when God was with him. Joseph was not immune to hard times, even when God was with him. He was either a slave or in prison for 13 years. That's a long time. A slave or in prison for 13 years. Nothing seems to go right for him. Nothing. When something does go right, something even worse happens to put him back to where he was. A worse spot than he even started from. And he didn't even do anything wrong. It's not like he made bad choices. When Potiphar's wife made her move, he did the right thing and he got punished for it. Even though God was with him, he still faced hard times. And not that was really tough, kind of hard, but really, really hard times. And we too will face hard times, but it doesn't mean that God is punishing us or trying to get us back for something. Sometimes it's just life. Sometimes in life, we go through hard times and struggles, but it doesn't mean that God is out to get us, trying to punish us. And I think sometimes in Christian circles, it can be easy to forget that we aren't immune to hard times, or that these hard times are not a punishment. I think sometimes our mind instinctively goes there, like, okay, God, why are you doing this to me? Like, what did I do wrong? Like, why is this happening to me? And sometimes we do. Sometimes we make bad choices. Sometimes we do things that we shouldn't do, and there are consequences that we have to face. And that's natural. But instinctively, our mind goes there. And sometimes there's nothing we could have possibly done. But sometimes we do have to ask ourselves a really hard question and say, okay, like, what did I play a part in this? Something bad happens, something goes wrong. We got to ask ourselves, okay, what was my part in this? Like, what could I have done differently? Like, did I do anything that made this worse? Sometimes we have to ask ourselves that. But sometimes there's nothing we could do, like in the case of Joseph. Like, if Joseph's in prison thinking, well, what could I have done differently? Like, I guess I could have, you know, slept with Potiphar's wife, but I don't know, that would have been wrong. Like, sometimes there's nothing we could have done differently. But I would say, in those times when we ask God, like, God, why are you doing this? Like, God, why is this happening to me? Like, why are you making this happen? A better question that we could potentially ask ourselves is, God, are you trying to teach me something? God, are you trying to show me something? Now, fair warning. In the thick of it, you're probably not going to be able to ask yourself that question, because you're going to be going through it. But maybe afterwards, or towards the end of it, you can ask yourself that question and see, okay, what did I learn in this time? And also warning, if someone is going through that hard time and they're explaining that to you, do not say to them, well, good news, you're going to learn a lot of good stuff here. Like, it's going to be great. I can't wait to see what you learn from this. Like, don't do that. But I think a lot of times, for most of us, those hard seasons we go through in life, when we look back at them, we actually learn the most. We're refined the most in those times. And although all of Joseph's life, God was with him, he wasn't just with him in the good times. God wasn't just with him when he was his father's favorite. God wasn't just with him when he was the top of Potiphar's house. He wasn't just with him when he was second in command of all of Egypt. He was with him when he was sold. He was with him in the pit. He was with him when he was put in jail. He was always with him. And so if that's you this morning and you're going through something, remember, God is always with you. He is still with you. He hasn't forgotten about you. He's not just there for you or with you in the good times. He's there with you all times. The second thing we can take away is that God can use evil plans for good. God can use evil plans for good. I want to read from Genesis. This is the very end of the story, Genesis 50. The very end. I'm going to be on the screen here. When Joseph's brothers saw that their father was dead, they said, "It may be that Joseph will hate us and pay us back for all the evil we did to him." That's like a total brother thing, right? It's like you think, he's going to get me back. Like, I know it. Like, we're brothers. Maybe he'll pay us back for all the evil we did to him. So they sent a message to Joseph saying, "Your father gave this command before he died. Say to Joseph, please forgive the transgression of your brothers and their sin because they did evil to you." So they're trying to be like, hey, Joseph, Dad's last words were this, man. Like, so you probably should listen. Like, on his deathbed, this is the last thing he said. "And now, please forgive the transgression of the servants of the God of your father." Joseph wept when they spoke to him. His brothers also came and fell down before him and said, "Behold, we are your servants." Like, they're just being like, don't kill us, basically. But Joseph said to them, "Do not fear, for am I in the place of God? As for you, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good, to bring it about that many people should be kept alive as they are today. So do not fear. I will provide for you and your little ones." Thus he comforted them and spoke kindly to them. So his brothers are worried. They're thinking, you know what, we're in trouble, so we don't want to die. And Joseph comes to them and says, hey, look, you planned all of this for evil, but God used it for good. All this stuff you planned for evil, but God used it for good. God can use evil plans for good. And like I said before, that doesn't mean that God just starts planning bad things for you. He's not out there trying to punish you or, you know, put you through the ringer or anything like that. But he can use hard times for our refining. And like I said, sometimes there's consequences to our actions for bad things that we do. And sometimes it's nothing we could have done. Sometimes people just do evil actions to us with no cause, with no justification. And that was Joseph. It's not like he made a series of bad choices and he was warned, hey, Joseph, you're really going down a wrong path here. Like, you should be careful. Like, he made right choice after right choice after right choice, and it still worked out badly for him. Sometimes for us, doing the right thing puts us in a worse position, honestly. Sometimes for us, doing the right thing puts us in a worse position. I remember when I was just graduated college, the summer afterwards, I had a friend who was moving. He was married, he was living in the married dorms at college, and he was moving from the dorms to a new apartment. And he had asked me to help him move. And that's like the true test of friendship. Like, if someone helps you move, like, they love you. Like, that's just facts. Like, if they help you move, they love you. If they bring a truck, they love you even more. Like, they're just, that's just how it works. And so he says, hey, can you help me move? I said, okay, it's a Saturday. I'm like, okay, sure. Like, how long do you need me? Maybe a couple hours. I said, okay, like, I only have a small car. I can bring it, but I can't really take much stuff. But yeah, I'll come. He said, yeah, we have lots of help. Like, it won't take too long. Okay, great. So I show up around 8 a.m. on the Saturday. I'm like, oh, I must be the first one here. So I walk upstairs and we start kind of bringing stuff down, and comes about an hour goes by and I say, hey man, is anyone else coming? And he's like, people have been canceling like crazy. I was like, oh, like, okay. He's like, yeah, so I don't know if anyone else is coming. It's like, oh, all right. It didn't help that he had just bought in like all this like new, like heavy furniture, like oak chests and this kind of stuff. Like, it was like crazy big marble like slats on top of the coffee table. It was awful. And so we're like lifting. Eventually one guy comes and I can only say for an hour, so he comes in, does some stuff and leaves. And so we're there for quite a while, and about 4 hours go by and we haven't even finished loading the truck to leave the place yet. And it's just been like, I'm exhausted. I'm the whole time I'm thinking like, I gotta get out of this. Like, I gotta get out of here. Like, so I'm thinking, what can I tell him? Could I be like, hey man, sorry, like you only told me it was gonna be a couple hours. I made plans, I didn't actually have plans, but I made these plans, so like, I gotta go, I'm sorry. Or I thought, maybe I'll finish loading the thing, and because he's on the third floor of an apartment, so I'm going down all these stairs, awful. And I'd say, well, maybe, you know, like, I loaded it up, but like, I have to go now, I'm really sorry, like, I have plans. And at this point, Elise, we were just dating at the time. She's there at this point, and her and his wife are kind of like they clean things, and they're doing that stuff. And I'm like just so tired of lifting, and the whole time I'm thinking, okay, I gotta get out of here. But the only plans I had were with Elise at night, like for dinner, so I couldn't even like lie. And then I'd have to get Elise in on the lie too, and say, Elise, like, we're gonna get out of here. We're making a break for it. Like, so it was terrible. And so, okay, I can't do it. So we stayed, and like we were there all day. Like, it was from 8 a.m. didn't finish till like 5, and then of course, like, oh, I'm gonna order some pizza. I'm like, I'm leaving, man. Like, I can't stay. Like, I gotta get out of here. I actually do have plans now with Elise, so I have to go. But it would have been so much better. Well, yeah, better for me to just lie and say, I gotta go, man. Sorry. And he couldn't even be mad at me. Like, I was here for 4 hours. Like, you can't be mad at me. Be mad at those lamos who didn't show. Like, you can't be mad. But I couldn't do it. And that was really worse for me because it was pretty tough. Maybe I have a bad back now. But sometimes for us, doing the right thing puts us in a worse spot. That was for Joseph too. Sometimes people unintentionally harm us. Sometimes people do things they don't mean to, but it works out badly for us. And sometimes, like I said, they purposefully do things to harm you. And that's a hard thing to kind of come to grasp with, is when someone purposely does something to harm you. And that was Joseph. Like, his brothers purposely harmed him. But God can still use those plans for good. But we have to be careful. We have to be careful, because when someone harms us or does wrong to us, we have to be careful, because a lot of times we allow that to harden our heart. When someone wrongs us, disappoints us, lies to us, we allow that to harden our heart, and we end up closing ourselves off. But Joseph didn't do that. But for us, sometimes we fall into that trap. We think, you know what, that's the last time that I trust this person. Or that's the last time I do a favor for anyone. That's the last time I do this. Or that's the last time I ask God for something because he didn't give it to me. That's the last time I pray because it didn't work out for me. That's the last time, and we harden our heart. But Joseph didn't do that. He didn't allow his heart to become hardened. He allowed those experiences to help shape him. And his obedience could have very well saved thousands and thousands of lives. I want you to imagine for a second what it would have looked like if Joseph allowed his heart to become hardened. First off, he's sold into slavery. He works his way up, and Potiphar's wife makes her move. He could have said, you know what? I'm stuck regardless. Because if I run away, I know that she's not going to just be like, nothing happened. Like, it's going to go badly for me. Who's Potiphar going to believe, me or his wife? Like, this is going to go badly. He could have said, you know what? Forget it. Nothing works out for me anyway. I might as well do it. Could have just done that. When he heard the dreams in jail from these two guys, he could have said, you know what? The last time I talked about dreams, I got thrown in a pit and sold into slavery. So I am not talking about I'm not helping you. I'm not telling you what these dreams mean. Or what about when people come from faraway lands to buy food, and Joseph could have been like, you know what? No one helped me. I'm not helping you. Why would I help you? So what? I had all of this happen to me. You're saying you're hungry? Too bad. Right? Imagine if he allowed his heart to become hardened. Or when his brothers come before him and they realize who he is, he could have said, hey, guess what? Payback time. Like, you're going to be thrown in a pit. You're going to be sold into slavery. But that's not what he did. And you might say, yeah, well, it's probably easier for Joseph, though, because everything worked out so great for him. Like, he's now second in command, so he probably would be easier to forgive. I don't think that's true. I want you to imagine for a second that someone that you really cared about wronged you in a way that you, like, lost your job, so you got fired, you lost your house, you lost all your family, and you're living on the streets for, like, years. Okay? And then something happens, you work your way up, and after about 10 years or so, you work your way up into a better position than you were in before. A way better job, more money, better house, all this kind of stuff. And then you're walking down the street and you see the person who wronged you. Do you think you tell them, hey, like, no worries, man. Like, it worked out great for me. It was 10 years in the street, but that's no problem. Like, you'd be upset. It wouldn't be easy for Joseph to forgive. It wouldn't be easy for him to even recognize, hey, you know what? You meant this to harm me, but God meant this to help others. That wouldn't be easy for him to say. But God can use evil for good. He can use hard circumstances for good. And we can, in fact, in those times, learn the most, or oftentimes learn the most, because we learn that we need to rely on God. So to wrap up, the life of Joseph has a lot in it, and we could spend a lot of time looking at each different example, each different circumstance, and we'd be here for quite a while. But I want us to remember two things this morning. First, that we are not immune to hard times, but in hard times, it does not mean that God is not with us. It does not mean that God has forgotten us. He is with us in good times and in hard times, but like Joseph, we have to remain faithful to him. And second is that God can use evil for good. The hard things that you are going through, or have gone through, or will go through, God can use those for good. He can use those for his purposes in his kingdom. And if we look back and reflect, and we think about, hey, what did this time teach me? When we reflect about, okay, what did I learn from this? How did this shape me moving forward? It can really help us understand and see maybe the plan, the purposes that God had. And sometimes you may never understand. Sometimes you're going to go through things and you're never going to understand why this happened. You're going to think, this is terrible. God, why? I don't know why you did this. I'm never going to understand it. That may be the case. We have to remain faithful as Joseph did. So this week, I hope that we can all remember that we need to remain faithful in hard times, because even if those hard times are caused by the purposeful evil actions of others, God can still flip that to use it for his purposes in his kingdom. Let me pray.